Lisa will now share our morning scripture with us.
Then Peter began to speak to them. I truly understand that God shows no partiality, but in every nation, anyone who fears him and does what is right is acceptable to him. You know the message he sent to people of Israel, preaching peace by Jesus Christ. He is Lord of all.
Thank you, Lisa. God shows no partiality. The message translation of that verse is, God has no favorites. But we actually have trouble with that, because I think most of us, well, have you, sometime in your childhood, did you ever feel like your parent was playing favorites, or that you had a teacher who had a favorite? Anytime we feel like someone's getting different or special treatment, it can touch into those feelings that are pretty easily accessible in most of us. And those feelings come from the fact that we're different. We all are not the same. And so we have these times when we feel like, well, that person's being treated differently than me, and it can threaten us. I think we have to confess that we as human beings have trouble with differences. Even though the world that God has made, as we were just describing, is full always of incredible variety. The world is a place of amazing diversity, but somehow we humans very quickly get anxious and threatened by things that are not familiar and not like us. Our Creator, however, clearly delights in variety and uniqueness. When we look at the world, there's not a single plant or insect, animal, human, river, lake, tree, or mountain that's exactly alike anyone else. Everything in God's creation celebrates diversity. But as human beings, we often don't know what to do with that. We don't know especially how to respond to other humans that God has made who don't look or behave or think or love like us. So we have to confess, our human brains tend to see the world in a binary way. It's the way we organize and categorize and make sense of our world. But we quickly slip into seeing things as black, white, straight, gay, good, or bad. And of course, there are times in your life, in all of our lives, when we do need to make quick choices between fight or flight or freeze. So when our primitive brains were developing, you know, we did need to be able to see that the saber-toothed tiger was a threat and do something. And I guess even today, yes, there are moments of threat that happen, moments of crisis when we have to make quick judgments. But as people, we so often get stuck in that anxious, reactive mode, seeing whatever or whoever that is strange or foreign as threat. And sadly, so much of the time, our religious traditions have been used to reinforce our either-or thinking, rather than calling us to embrace and love the amazing variety of God's creation. People who are different are not a threat, but they can stretch us and challenge our assumptions, and being with them can make us feel strange and uncomfortable, but it can also open us up in all sorts of surprising ways. I want you just to stop and think a moment. In your own life, what are some of your most memorable experiences of being with people who were really, really different from you? In our Wednesday sharings, interviews that have been happening, I've heard some stories from different ones of you. I think particularly of the Coys talking about their time in Russia, the Soviet Union. Other people have talked about other experiences. Sue Iman talked about her Peace Corps experience. Jim Grant talked about his. Just a wide range of opportunities we've had, different ones of us, to be with really different people for a trip or even to live with them. And we've also had a wide range of worship experiences, some of us. Maybe it's been being in a black church worship experience, or at the Jewish temple, or at the Islamic center. Maybe we've had experiences trying to help people who were refugees or migrants. What do you remember feeling in those times? Do you remember that mix of uncomfortable, uncertain, but also curiosity? The challenge, of course, is to lean into the curiosity and not turn to getting defensive and threatened. This month is Gay Pride Month, and it's a time for us to affirm and celebrate the diversity that makes up the LGBTQ+ community. But we also have to acknowledge that even as there's this growing coming out of people of all sorts of sexual orientations and gender identities, there are people who find it confusing and therefore threatening. They don't understand, it's not their experience, so they judge and they condemn. I heard on the radio and was reminded yesterday that it was the 5th anniversary of the Pulse nightclub murders in Orlando, where 49 people lost their lives and many more were injured and traumatized because one man chose to lash out in violence against those he did not understand and refused to accept. And of course, we know there are many other incidents. Some of you have experienced ways that you've been judged, mistreated, victimized. When Bill and I were in Orlando last month, we ended up staying at an Airbnb run by a really fascinating older gay couple, Chuck and Ken. They're the kind of Airbnb host that would leave you alone if you wanted, but they'd really love to talk to you. And so we sat out by their pool and had some fascinating conversations. But part of what we learned as we got acquainted was that Ken grew up as a Southern Baptist in Alabama and was married to a woman, had 3 young adult children now. And when he finally decided he had to come out, only his children of his entire family have stayed open to him, have stayed in relationship with him. It was an interesting conversation for us as 2 Baptist ministers to have with Ken, to talk and to realize the ways that he has totally lost his connection to church, and yet he wants it. He misses it. So we brainstormed some what options he might have in Orlando. We shared a couple book titles he might find interesting to read. But I just felt the pain of that, the loss of that, the suffering for him. And I wondered, you know, here in Ithaca, we have so many churches that are welcoming, and yet I still wonder, are there Kins in Tompkins County that might still need to find First Baptist as a place to be welcomed and affirmed? When we think about diversity in this country, of course, we always also focus on racial diversity. And this coming Saturday is Juneteenth, which has been a celebration of African American history that commemorates the last slaves way out in Texas who finally got the news that they had been set free and that the Civil War was over. But how many Americans outside the black community even knew about Juneteenth until Donald Trump wanted to hold a rally that date last year? And of course, he wanted to hold that rally in Tulsa, of all places, the site of probably one of the most horrific racial massacres in American history, which happened 100 years ago this year. But how many of us knew about that until the last year or two? So much of the challenge of our times is trying to come to terms with our painful history of denial, of repression, of violence against any and all who are seen as different. So often, different has gotten defined as bad, as wrong, as immoral. And it's continuing today, the attack on what's being labeled as critical race theories, the state legislatures that are trying to ban teaching about racism as systemic in public schools. It plays out on and on as people are threatened and they turn to deny, to repress what is different. Sadly, we've also seen it in the last month playing out in the Middle East. The recent warfare between Israelis and Palestinians, Jews and Arabs, a conflict as old as human history in the Middle East, is the latest variation of the Jews and Gentiles struggle that we see in the New Testament. Because throughout the whole New Testament, we see this fundamental human struggle being played out in the early church. Was the good news of Jesus Christ just for the Jews, or was it for the whole world? The Spirit's coming at Pentecost seemed to make it pretty clear they were speaking in all sorts of different languages. They were going to go back to the whole known world telling what had happened in Jerusalem that day. So, okay, the early church said, if the Spirit is here for all of us, did non-Jews, did Gentiles who came to believe in Jesus have to become Jews? Did they need to be circumcised? Did they need to keep a kosher diet? Did they need to commit to all the Jewish religious practices? If you read with the lens of how do we deal with diversity, throughout the New Testament, that struggle is going on. Throughout the church, that struggle has gone on. Sadly, I have heard in the last week or two of two more conservative churches in New York that are on the verge of splitting over mask or no mask. Can you believe that? Mask or no mask to become the dividing line about whether they can be in fellowship with each other. When we look at that first church in Jerusalem, we see, as we talked about last week, there was this initial time of harmony and unity, but the differences started to cause challenges pretty quickly. You can read a couple in the next chapter or two, I think it's chapter 5 in the book of Acts, how there started being arguments that when the food was being distributed, maybe the Gentile widows weren't getting as much as the Jewish widows. The first deacons were commissioned, ordained, to handle the food distribution and make sure it was fair. That was the first job of deacons in the church. And of course, the message of that first church, of those apostles, put them in direct conflict with the Jewish leaders. They were starting out a sect of Judaism, but throughout the New Testament, we see as more and more Gentiles became a part of the group, they became a separate religious group. Peter and John found themselves being hauled before the council, arrested, whipped, told to stop preaching, but they would not stop. As Peter and John said to the council, you have to judge for yourselves whether we should obey God or obey you, but we cannot stop telling the good news of what we have experienced. Many came to them, many responded. So the church was growing, which is part of why I become a threat. Here's this group that's acting differently, teaching differently, and they become a threat. And so persecution came, and we read in the book of Acts, Stephen, one of those first deacons, was stoned to death for his different beliefs. And the Jerusalem church was scattered, driven out of the city for fear of their lives. But everywhere they went, they kept sharing the good news, and little house churches kept popping up. So we come to this little snippet that Lisa read from the story of all of Acts chapter 10. Simon Peter had left Jerusalem. He was in Joppa. He was at the house of Simon the Tanner, preaching and teaching the little community of believers in Jesus that had formed there. In a not too far away city of Caesarea, there was a centurion, Cornelius, who is described as a God-fearing man who was generous, who gave to the poor, who prayed regularly, seeking God. And one day, Cornelius had a vision of an angel. And the angel said to him, send a messenger to Joppa and find Simon Peter. And Cornelius is like, okay, what does that mean? And he gets his messengers and he sends them to Joppa. Meanwhile, Simon Peter is staying at the house of Simon the Tanner. And they're fixing lunch and he goes up on the roof to pray. Those homes frequently, generally flat roof where you could actually go up on the roof. So he goes up on the roof to get some quiet and to pray. Do you remember this story? He has this vision. And in this vision, he sees this huge blanket dropping down from the sky full of all these animals, creatures, reptiles, snakes, all sorts of things. And the voice says, take and eat. And Peter's like, no way. There's not one kosher critter in that whole crowd. I am not touching one of those animals for anything. happens three times. Take, eat. And he's like, no. And the voice says, what God has said is what God has made, you should not say is unclean or profane. What God has made, you should never say is unclean. The vision ends. Peter's sitting there going, what was that? And then the messenger arrives knocking at the door saying, Cornelius, the Roman centurion, has sent for you. He wants you to come to his home. And Peter kind of goes, oh, okay. I'm supposed to go to a Roman centurion's home? I'm supposed to go to a Gentile's home? I'm supposed to talk to a Roman? He made the connection. He said yes. He gets his things. He gets some of the others to come with him, and they go to Caesarea. And when he walks in the door of Cornelius' home, when he stepped across that doorstep, he had broken the rules. He had violated his ritual practice, his Jewish practices. And he said to them, you know, I'm not supposed to be here. As a good Jew, you know I shouldn't show up here, but God has told me what God has made, I should not say is unclean or profane. And Cornelius tells him about his vision of the angel, and Peter begins to respond with these words, God has no favorites. It is clear, God does not show partiality. God's not saying, this is good and this is bad. God is saying, I have made all of you, and all of you are good. Can we realize what a radical thing that was for a good Jewish Orthodox man? All of their lives, for generations and generations, they had been told they were the chosen ones. They were God's special people. They were God's favorites. No matter how bad things were for Jewish people, they could hold on to, we're God's favorites. And here in this moment, Peter is blown away with this recognition. No, you're not. Everyone is God's favorites. I referenced the book, The Shack, a while back. The figure that is portrayed as God frequently says to people, I'm especially fond of you. But after a while, the narrator realizes that this is God's response to everyone. I'm especially fond of you. Everyone is special in God's eyes. God has no favorites, but God is especially fond of each and every one of us in our uniqueness. Peter went on to tell the group that Cornelius had gathered there, his family, his friends, about the life of Jesus Christ, about his teaching and his healing, about his death on the cross and his resurrection from the dead. He told them, and while he was still speaking, the story says, the Holy Spirit came upon all these Gentiles, all these Romans that were listening to Peter preach. And the Jewish believers who had come along with Peter were astonished that the gift of the Spirit was being poured out even to the Gentiles, even to these people who had made no effort yet to become Jews, but were simply Greek Gentiles, pagans. And Peter said to them, is there any way we can argue that we shouldn't baptize them in water when they've already been baptized with the Spirit of God? And they all had to say, no. There's no way we can argue against this. There are no favorites. There are no first and second class followers of Jesus Christ. Now, the entire book of Acts and throughout the letters of the New Testament, we still see this struggle going on with the church to try to come to terms with this very, very radical idea and to struggle with what does it mean? What does it mean? What are the essentials about being a Christian that we should teach new believers about how they should behave and how they should act? And what are just Jewish practices that are just about Jewish identity, but not about the essentials of Christian faith? God has no favorites. Don't call anyone that God has made profane or unclean. It's a belief that we try to live out here at First Baptist Church, isn't it? We want to be welcoming, nurturing, inclusive of all. We want to practice the Baptist freedoms, that we can have a wide range of understandings and theologies and spiritual journeys, and yet all of us can be part of this shared community. This story in the book of Acts of Peter and Cornelius affirms our beliefs. We are all created by God. We are all beautiful. We are all blessed. We are all sacred, just the way we are. Thanks be to God. Amen.